Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Mom, I'd like to propose a dinner optimization plan for 2026.
Soccer practice every week. Get back late and you're stressed out about making something fast but actually nutritious for dinner.
When Ashley's mom picked me up, I noticed that she made Blue Apron. It came in like a little kit. By the time it was ready, I still had shin guards on. And it was real food, fresh veggies, protein, actual flavor.
Take her from the younger generation or innovators keeping a couple Blue Apron meals around. Not the worst idea.
Get 50% off your first two orders plus free shipping with code LISTEN50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
The race for the Ellicott District, Darius Pridgen giving up that seat after 12 years, and one of the people running for it, Matt Deering, is in studio with us now. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Now, I asked you this question off the air, and I'm going to ask you on the air. Why do you want to get into this? You're in this political field. Why do you want to continue being in this political field that is ever more divisive?
If anything, I think it's to bring some unity and get rid of that divisiveness. I think that there's been a lot of infighting and petty politicking that goes on. And I think there's a need for some good faith negotiators in government, regardless of, you know, where they are on the political spectrum. That's why I'm happy to be here on 930 WBEN. I know a lot of folks of my particular persuasion wouldn't be keen to join you, but... you know, I'm trying to show people that we need more sort of conversational, empathy-led politics and politicians, and that's why I'm happy to be here today.
And I agree. Now, you have experience in politics. You've been part of the office of an assemblyman, Pat Burke, as we had you here last time. How does that experience get you ready for something like this, running as the actual candidate for something like the council?
Well, as for the running, it's very, very different. You know, I've worked in campaigns and then obviously in government as well. And boy, every candidate I've ever worked for, I tell them to put their nose to the grindstone and call people and ask them for money. Oh, tell them it doesn't seem so hard. Let me tell you, it's very, very hard. No matter how well you know people, it's a nerve-wracking experience. But I think my experience that I do have working in government and politics in particular, you know, prepares me for an office like this because of really what my goals are. And it's given me a vision for what I think a city council, a common council member's office could be. And my time working in the assembly, especially doing the community relations work, is, I think, going to be my biggest asset, you know, if I am fortunate enough to be given the opportunity to serve the people of the Ellicott District in the city of Buffalo.
Now, looking at the Common Council, you know, we hear from the Common Council almost regularly, even especially on this station, on our news programs. What about the Common Council made you want to jump in? What is, in your opinion, the state of the Common Council?
I think the council and government in general, I mean, the biggest thing that I've been hearing from people when I've been out on the doors and, you know, out in the community is that people want more accessibility to their representatives. And on the Common Council, I think, you know, the local politics like that is really the ground floor of civic engagement between people and government. And again, that constituent services work that I did, I think is the biggest piece. The thing I hear the most is that government has been unresponsive, that just when people call, they don't always get a call back. When there's a problem, you know, they're, you know, told to call 311, or our office can't deal with that. And, you know, there are areas where, you know, your city councilman can't do anything. But there are a lot of opportunities in government. It's something I learned when I was working in Assemblyman Burke's office, was that there are a lot more opportunities for people in government to get in the way in a good way and to try to, you know, make the buck stop at their office instead of just passing it on to somebody else. And that's I think that's just the thing that's lacking in general in government. I think that's one reason why there's so much distrust locally, nationally, between people in government. I mean, there's a lack of faith in institutions. And I think it's because far too often our elected officials like to sit in the ivory tower or the beautiful Art Deco building that is Buffalo City Hall, instead of, you know, being the person who picks up the phone or is out in the community talking to people in a governmental capacity and not in maybe the capacity that they have in another role. And not that that's a bad thing, but I think oftentimes people who are in some of these elected positions where people view them as maybe not necessarily being full-time jobs. I mean, you know, the city council, each office gets about $200,000 in a budget, and between the council member staff and, or sorry, between the council member salary and their staff salaries. And I think people should get $200,000 worth of work out of it, which means, you know, 9 to 5, either be in the office or be out in the community and, you know, be available for people to talk to about what the problems, you know, that are going on in their lives and how you might be able to solve them.
Now, looking at this past year, there have been two big issues the council has been faced with. And I'll start with the first one. The fluoride, you know, was a big thing. For 7 years, there was not fluoride in the water. And it seems like anyone you asked in the Common Council didn't know that. Do you think that was a failure of the Common Council?
I think a failure is a strong word, but I know the information was out there, but it was very, very hard to find. And I think, if anything, there's been a lack of action from the council when it comes to using their power to hold the executive branch accountable for some of the missteps that they may have made. Now, if you dig into this fluoride story, for instance, you'll notice that, and I wrote something on my Facebook about it before I had even, you know, decided to jump into this race, which is that if you were to, say, go to the Water Authority website and look at the treatment section, it tells you that there's fluoride added to the water. There's a lot of use of the present tense, but then hidden, not hidden, but in the maybe seventh or eighth page of some of these reports, you'll find that after it says water fluoride is added to the water here in the city, there's a addendum that says fluoride hasn't been added to your water since 2015. And I think because there's a trend, I think, of a lack of transparency, that the council has an ability to both call that out and use their, I mean, it's a legislative body that has, you know, subpoena power. And I do think that there's a bit too much sort of a sit on our hands mentality that goes on. And as a result, you know, people are left in the dark on important issues like that one. And I think, again, that's because of my independence, I'll say, from any given institution in the city. I think I've got a unique ability to call that out, but not to do it in a bad faith way. I think oftentimes in politics and government, both people believe that any and all criticism is in bad faith. A thing I want to bring to the council is an attitude of governing in good faith and good government practices, one of which is transparency and being willing to call out anybody who, you know, is not pushing that principle forward.
Another major thing that the council has to deal with, and believe me, after the blizzard of 22, we had almost every council member on the station, is you know, the snow cleanup in the city. It seems to always be an issue, even after the smallest snowstorms, and obviously was a big issue after the blizzard. What do you think, number one, is the council's job in that? Number two, looking at the Ellicott District, what would you like to see the next time we have a major snowstorm?
I think we have to recognize that the weather in this region in particular is changing. Now, this is a bit of conjecture. I've tried to get a hold of some local climatologists and meteorologists, but it seems in recent years that the metro area that often avoided the worst of a lot of these storms has been getting hit repeatedly with, you know, pretty bad lake effect. The lake's not freezing as much as it used to. So I think we have to, in general, adjust our strategy when it comes to how we tackle these storms, because I think we're going to see long periods where we get no snow and then we're going to get dumped on in pretty harsh ways. And I think the council's responsibility is to work with the administration on really modernizing how we handle with snow in the first place. I think the thing I've been saying to people is we're using sort of 20th century snow removal strategies for 21st century problems. And I think we have to start to look at some of these other cities that deal with really bad snow in a much better way than we do. We can't just keep pushing this stuff, you know, into a parking lot, because eventually the parking lots fill up. We have a lot of narrow one-way streets where people park on one side or another, and as a result, their cars get walled in. Bus routes have to change. You know, we have to look at, you know, bringing in more modern equipment. But we also have to, you know, the council, I think in particular, you know, I think we were due a report on the blizzard at the end of February from the administration, and it hasn't come yet. I'm curious where that is, and I'm curious what the council is doing to guarantee that that information is made available to the public. But we have to, you know, look to the future and what we think the problems are going to be. And I think that these storms in particular are going to get worse. So maybe we have to start to get some of those giant snowblower things that they use in cities like Montreal to clear some of these narrow streets. And, you know, that's going to cost money. So we have to find ways to reallocate funds in the city budget, I think, to fight that, because it seems to be, you know, something that's going to become a worse and worse problem as time goes on.
You know, and we've talked to council members like Joe Kolombek, Mitch Nowakowski, and, you know, as a lot of districts have the same problems, each district seems to have unique problems as well. What do you think is problems are facing the Ellicott district that you would like to get started on if you were to be elected?
I think the biggest one is the, you know, there's a legacy of, you know, longtime homeownership, particularly. I mean, the district has changed a lot with the most recent redistricting. We've picked up quite a few parts of the Elmwood Village between, you know, Lafayette and Summer, and some parts of downtown have been added. But there are a lot of like multi-generational homeowners who, you know, have done a lot to maintain their properties, but they need a bit more help. And I think, you know, there are programs that the city has that I think aren't being brought to them and haven't been made available. And, you know, again, something in my experience in the assembly was sort of helping people navigate some of this bureaucracy with programs like unemployment. I think that'd be something I'd be particularly good at. There's a big rent problem, which, you know, affects the entire city. But Councilmember Pridgen, in his WBFO interview he did with Dave Debo, he talked about that being sort of his biggest priority, trying to address the ever skyrocketing costs of both homes and apartments. So I think we need to, you know, attack that problem sort of from both ends. And then there are just like some infrastructure challenges when it comes to the lack of insulation in homes, you know, landlords who aren't, you know, maintaining HVAC systems and furnaces and the properties that they own. There are a lot of these out of area landlords who are holding up property, I think, that could be, you know, renovated and lived in by people who are in the community, generating, you know, more funds in the economy. But obviously, you know, Ellicott in particular has a long legacy of systemic disinvestment and, you know, discrimination. You know, there's a legacy of redlining and blockbusting, and then the urban renewal policies that followed that, you know, have affected neighborhoods like the Fruit Belt. So I think having sort of a comprehensive strategy, both at the district level and at the city level, is something that any council member needs, because, you know, where one district stops, the next one begins. And it's not like in Congress, where Congressman Higgins is here in Erie County and then Congressman Morelli is out in Monroe County, and there's a big divide in between. You know, my district ends at halfway across the street, and you've got to be willing to work with the next council member and the people from all across the city, especially, you know, when you look at how the districts have been redrawn, which is certainly something that I have plenty of thoughts about. Gerrymandering is certainly a word that could be used to describe it, but, you know, you play the cards that you're dealt. And I think that there's a bit of a parochial approach that many of the council members have. You know, I was at a meeting maybe 3 weeks ago, and a woman was you know, bringing up a problem that she had with a bar that was in her district. I believe that she was in, well, again, with the way the lines have been drawn, but she was about, you know, 500 yards, say, outside of the Niagara district at the time. And, you know, the response was, oh, well, that's not in my district. And, you know, it's 1500 feet outside of your district. You know, you could at least, you know, try to do something about it anyway. And that was the thing, you know, we did in the assembly. I would get calls from people who might live in a different assembly district. And they're like, I've been having problems with unemployment. I haven't heard back. You know, it doesn't cost me anything to try to help you, to try to solve that problem that you're dealing with in your life. And again, that's sort of the attitude that I want to bring to the council and create a culture in my office that's one that, you know, starts with empathy and not, you know, ego or a personal agenda. I certainly have a vision for what I'd like the district to look like and the city to look like. But at the end of the day, at the ground floor of a government, you know, the most work that you do is that constituent services piece and connecting people with both government and with, you know, nonprofits and other organizations that can help to solve those problems. And that's the kind of culture that I want to create in my office if I'm fortunate enough to win this race.
Now, you are running against Leah Holton Pope, who was an advisor to the majority leader, Crystal People Stokes, also Pastor Michael Chapman and Cedric Holloway. Any thoughts on the people that are also in this race?
You know, I think both Ms. Halton and Mr. Holloway are, you know, also more than qualified, you know, for a position like this. Obviously, doing work with the majority leader, you know, you've been in a position to have a lot of influence both across the city and the state, obviously. And then Mr. Holloway has done a lot of great work out of the Johnny B. Wiley and with his own foundation. He actually is he's a neighbor of mine. He lives about five houses down the street from me on Linwood Ave. So, you know, my mom's from southwestern West Virginia, home of the Hatfields and McCoys. And I really hope it doesn't become a situation like that. I don't think it will. I've known him, you know, pretty much my entire life. You know, when it comes to Mr. Chapman, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in the McCarley Gardens and in some of the housing that, you know, is owned by his development company. And the people there are pretty displeased with their living conditions. And I think, I do think that there's a certain amount of hubris that's required when, you know, your own tenants are holding press conferences and talking about the fact that there's rodents in their apartments. And, you know, Rod Watson wrote a piece back in February about the conditions at the St. John Towers on Michigan Ave. So, you know, when it comes to that, I, you know, he's not a registered Democrat. I'm not sure if he's going to be competing in the Democratic primary or not. But, you know, I'm interested in having a campaign and a discussion about the issues that are facing the district and the people of the city more broadly. You know, there's a lot of infighting, I think, that goes on. There's a lot of factionalization, you know, in our local politics. And again, I came into politics in a sort of different way. I don't want to say I broke my way in because, you know, I had, you know, people open some doors for me who weren't necessarily connected either to the party or to the mayor's office. And I think, again, that gives me a certain latitude I'm unmoored from some of these older ties, which means I think I have an ability in particular to bring, you know, different groups of people to the table and actually work toward a solution that benefits everybody. You know, I think the best solutions oftentimes are ones where everybody feels like they got something and maybe they didn't get something that they were looking for. And I'm not out for, you know, one team or another. I'm just here to try to get the results that everybody wants. And I think I'll have an opportunity to highlight that as the race goes on.
All right, final question. We'll cut a little into Chuck Todd's time. A final question, because I ask everyone in an election this, anything that I left out that you would like to address before we finish up here today?
No, Joe, I mean, you're always a pretty good interviewer, at least in my experience. You know,
I think
you're a two for two at this point. No, I think, you know, I think, again, you know, I grew up on Linwood Ave, just a block away from Main Street. I get that I'm young, and a lot of people have talked about, you know, the fact that I'm an unknown. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to get to know sort of more of the people who may be saying that. But the truth is, I grew up between both sides of Buffalo and both sides of this new district. You know, I was a private school kid. I was fortunate when I moved there with my mom in 99. But after I went to private school and went away to college for a couple of years, you know, I came back and I worked in call centers, you know, in the Lovejoy district and on the east side of Buffalo. And, you know, I spent time on, you know, Montana Ave and on Bissell and on Goodyear. You know, I know what it's like to, you know, shop at Wegmans and get the little frozen party wings from Price Choppers. So I think I have a way to synthesize the concerns of the people across this district, because the truth is, whether I've been in Elmwood, I've been, you know, off Northampton or Riley, a lot of the people have the same concerns. They want to protect the legacy that they've made for their children. You know, they want their communities to be safer. They want people to stop flying down the streets at 60 miles an hour, regardless of, again, whether you live on Lafayette or, you know, you live on Riley. And the district goes, you know, from, you know, Bailey to Elmwood, from Ferry to Perry. And I think I have spent time in all those parts of the district throughout my entire life. And I've seen the changes as I've grown up. The district has changed. And I think I'm, for that reason, I'm the perfect person to represent it going forward. But the campaign's not, it's not about me. It's not about a resume. It's about the people and the concerns that they have and who's going to, you know, work to find solutions to those problems.
Matt Deering, running for the Ellicott District to replace Reverend Darius Pridgen, who is stepping down after 12 years. Matt, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate it, Joe. MattForElicott.com, Twitter.com/Matt4Ellicott. Keep an eye on it, and we'll see what happens.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled BABBEL.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron and Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback. I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some from my mom. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Rules and restrictions apply.